Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, open year-round. Learn more at bbg.org.
This week, Meat and Three is taking you to market and all over the world, from Newfoundland to Tunisia.
Well, a lot of us think of, you know, the British Empire trading things like spices and sugar and silk, but you write that it actually began with salt cod from Newfoundland.
There was a port closure in Tunisia, which was horrible. I mean, it was months, boats just sitting on the water waiting to go, and they couldn't go anywhere.
And we'll learn about how markets have changed, whether because of their customers or the climate.
A few years ago, something around 10 years, it was totally different.
It almost manifests itself to almost smelling like an old fire pit. When you, when you put it out, it has that sort of charcoal-y smell to it. It's not good for wine.
Join us this week on Meat and Three for our global market tour. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Dana Cowan, and you are listening to a special episode of Speaking Broadly. Today, we're broadcasting a piece of a live podcast that we did at Haven's Kitchen. A bunch of HRN hosts got together and interviewed each other for a really rockin' time. Some of my favorites, Zara Tangora, Breton Scott, Max and Eli Sussman, Ali Kane. If you want to hear any of those interviews, check out Meat and Three, which is Heritage's own podcast. And to hear a little bit about my backstory, what I'm doing now, what I'm thinking about, listen on.
Hi, everybody. So this is super exciting because I get to kind of flip the script on Dana. She's the host of Speaking Broadly, but today I get to ask her all the burning questions that I have, and I think a lot of you also have. So obviously, Dana was with Food and Wine for 20 years, and then at that point, she spent a few years making a lot of transitions and kind of finding some, as she put it, buckets to put her passions into. So I want to talk a little bit about your experience and then also ask a few questions of words of advice for others. So let's start with Food and Wine. And you were there for 20 years. What was kind of the moment where you started to decide that it was maybe time to leave and you were ready to make a change?
It was 21, but who's counting? The journey to leave Food and Wine started like 4 years before I actually left. And I was like, I decided I was going to map my way out. I was going to write a book, and my book was going to be super, super successful. And when it was successful, it was going to change my life. And then that was going to be my path. And I thought that was really quite a plan. And the book was called Mashing My Mistakes in the Kitchen, because even though, you know, I'd been at Food and Wine all that time, that just meant I was really, really well fed, right? I never had to cook for myself. The kitchen was around the corner. I would had things dropped on my desk 8 times a day. I didn't even have to get up to eat. And so I just, like, I don't know, cook. Like, I worked late. I went out to, I had kids. They did eat, but I didn't feed them. And so I was like, oh, this is so good because I can learn to cook, and then I can have 65 amazing chefs teach me to cook. And then I fail at so many things. So it's not just that I make mistakes in food, but also finance, huge area of pain for me, as is health. So that I had this whole series in my head. But that didn't work out. The book was great. I really enjoyed doing it, but it was not my exit, as you can tell, because there's no follow-up. So for 2 years after that book, I met with someone like every 2 weeks. I'm like, I put myself on a schedule. I'm going to meet really interesting people, and this is how it went. I love my job at Food and Wine. I mean, It's so great. But I'm just wondering, like, the thing that you do, like, would that be good for me? And so I had a series of these conversations just trying to figure out, like, what type, what area could I go into that was related to food and media, but not food and media, because that part was really clear to me. I'd been doing it, I'd been in media literally for 30 years. So I was kind of done. Like, I didn't want to reinvent another magazine. I didn't want to create another brand. I didn't want to, there's a lot of didn't want to's. I didn't want to, which, you know, sounds a little petulant after the fact. But in those conversations, there was someone who, at Food and Wine, we had created a restaurant in Aspen at the St. Regis, and the restaurant was called Chef's Club, and it was a restaurant where the Food and Wine best new chefs would cook, and it was rotating chefs, rotating menus, and I was offered a job working at Chef's Club, and it was like this. I knew that brand because I helped build the brand along with the publisher of Food and Wine, who had a huge role in making that come to life. And I didn't know the team that well that was going to bring the brand to New York. That was the big draw. Like, oh my God, we're going to do it in New York, and then we're going to conquer the world. I'm like, oh, chefs around the world? Like, that sounds like so much fun.
FW Scout.
Exactly. But it also, it was like, I knew I wanted to get out, and I was like, this job, it's like a very small trampoline outside the window. So I knew that as I jumped out of this amazing job that I'd had for such a long time and that I really, really had enjoyed for so much of it, there would be something like to bounce off. I wasn't going to like break bones. But I also was aware that on that very small trampoline, they're like shards of glass. Like, it was going to hurt. And in fact, that was a short-lived job.
So transitions to begin with are scary and risky.
I didn't actually find it scary at all. I was really happy, and I was happy to try something new. I was like, so you get some cuts, you like, you know, clean it out. There's alcohol. For the wounds, there's alcohol, and there's you know, you wrap it up and you move on. So I didn't actually find that scary. What I had found scary for literally 15 years was the idea that I had no idea what else I would do. Like, that job was so much fun. Not knowing what could possibly be next, that was terrifying. And knowing that not knowing was going to hold me back, that was scary. Walking out the door and going, hey, I'm going to try something. Like, maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not going to work. That actually wasn't scary at all.
So then in 2017, in January 2017 is when you launched Speaking Broadly with us at HRN. When did you decide a podcast would be something that would be a project of yours, and what about that was appealing?
Yeah, so I love the format. One of the things about, so as an editor, you'd think like editors are all writers, but this editor is not a writer. Like, I do not consider myself a writer first. So podcasting has the ability to, I get to indulge in the stuff I really like to do, which I love asking questions. I can't tell that tonight. But I like getting information, I like getting to the heart of things, and I really like not having to write them down. So podcasting appealed to me for that reason, and I was going to lose the ability to have a voice on a large scale. Like, great thing about Food and Wine, voice large scale. Lots of people get to hear the things you're super excited about. And I didn't want to lose that opportunity to share the stuff that I was really, really excited about, and the people and their stories that I felt like needed to be heard. So that was another thing that was super exciting about podcasting. And it was also something that I'd never done, since I wanted to do things that I had never done before. So that was super exciting. So that was the trifecta. I mean, I'm sure there's more, but like, there's not that much time. That's good.
Well, but yeah, but let's talk a little bit more about the show specifically. I mean, it is a very different format. You're spending 45 minutes roughly with someone, and you're letting them tell their story in a more, you know, in-depth way. What about when you're doing a show and you're interviewing someone, what about that conversation makes you interested in, is, why are you passionate about that?
Well, the thing with editorial, I don't know if anyone, I mean, there's two sides to editorial today, right? Some things are super, super short, and then there is some really beautiful long-form journalism being done today that is exceptional. But the journalism that I was sort of promoting, participating in, was super short. And people's voices were really cut down to two quotes. And the amazing thing about speaking broadly is to be able to just go, like, keep going and keep asking the questions and not edit the people. And so sometimes, you know, it's not the sharpest, it's not the most direct, it's not the fastest. Like, the editor in me is like, I just want to cut it out and make this five bullet points and share it with everybody. But there's something beautiful about letting the story unfold and being able to share the depth of someone's experience and to get to things that really matter. And what I find with radio is it takes a while. You have to let people warm up to you, warm up to the things that are scary to them before you can ask them the scary questions. And I really like asking the scary questions because then I think you get the more valuable answers. So you need the 45 minutes to be able to get to that point of trust. If at Heritage we edited shows, it would, like, you know, be different. You could get to the trust in a different way, but to me it's a exercise in trust with the of course the guest, and then with the listener, that they want to be giving and supportive. Like, I find that the audience for this show is incredibly supportive of the people who've, like, bared their souls and, you know, cried and, you know, said stuff that's really hard for them.
But podcasting wasn't the only thing that you pursued post Chef's Club. What were some of the other things that you explored as you were trying to find what were the other things you did want to be doing?
Yeah. So I, it's like, what do they say? It's like a fire hose, or what is it?
Anybody?
It's like a Nerf gun. You know, like, I did not take the Nerf gun approach. I took the fire hose. So I've been doing a bunch of consulting, and I work a bunch with Dig In, which is a brand that I love. And I'm working on PR and marketing and working on chef's councils with them. So I still get to work with chefs and create partnerships, which is really fun for me because I love chefs. And speaking broadly, if you don't know, it's all women. So my universe is incredibly female. The consulting is two genders exist, which is great. And I've done a ton of traveling and speaking and lecturing on topics like, you know, empowerment or women in the industry. And so that part has been really fun. And then working on, I've been working on all these things. And so it has felt really scattershot until the subway revelation. I actually, you know, you hear about these things and you're like, yeah, they're just telling you they had the subway revelation, but I had one. And it's really recent. So I do a lot of coaching of people just, it's been part of my life. But now I've created something called the Broadleys. And it's all the things that I do broadly. So there's the speaking broadly, which is the podcast. And there's giving broadly, which is charitable, with a charitable focus. There's coaching broadly. So I was working with The Wing and coaching women one-on-one, and then did a live performance of coaching. And it's just this weird thing that I love. I can tell people, like, if you give me an hour and a half, I can tell you what you should do next with your life. An hour and a half. Half an hour, I'm pretty good. An hour and a half, you're done. You don't need to talk to anybody else. And, you know, people will say, like, that's five therapy sessions in one. And now, because therapists don't tell you what to do. I'm really happy to tell you what to do. You know, which comes from a lifetime of enjoying telling people what to do. So, coaching, giving, scouting, because I, you know, I love to eat and drink and travel, and cooking. So it's the Broadleys, and it just came to me in the subway because it's all the things that I love to do that all have now united under this this one umbrella. But it took me 2 years of trying, like trying this, trying that, experimenting. Saying yes to, I don't actually believe in saying yes to everything. I think that's actually very stupid. More on that if you're curious. But I did say yes to everything.
We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back shortly for more insights from Dana Cowan. This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn featuring spectacular plant displays year-round. Make the most of the last days of summer on Thursday, August 22nd at Brooklyn Botanic Garden's Beer and Bocce Benefit, a one-of-a-kind garden party featuring lawn games, live music, and unlimited beer tastings by some of Brooklyn's top beer makers. Proceeds from the Beer and Bocce Benefit provide essential support for the garden's educational and community programs. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org. Welcome back. I'm Kat Johnson, HRN's Communications Director, here with Speaking Broadly host and former editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine, Dana Cowan. So in the theme of aspiration to action, one of the things we're trying to kind of demystify is this idea that some people have it all figured out and have it figured out from the beginning. You're saying that it took you a while. How can people going through sort of the like searching for answers, how can they feel better about that process? Or what advice do you have?
It's the very hardest thing to do, but it's trust. Right? Like, and so I have this pet peeve. I have started reading a lot of the pop, I guess you call them self-help, empowerment, what to do next books, and I really hate them. And I was trying to figure out why, and it's because they make it seem really easy, and it's not easy. You know, it's like, so you just enjoy the journey. Like, how are you supposed to enjoy the journey? The journey actually isn't fun. I mean, at the end, it's fun because you look back and it's like well, Mount Everest now isn't fun, but it's like you've done your own Everest, and you look back, and it's awesome. But the thing, if you know at the beginning that really, truly, it will work out, and you can trust that these small steps you're taking are going to go somewhere. They're not actually a circle of hell into the center of the earth. They're quite the opposite. You know, the steps you take are leading you somewhere and you don't know exactly where they are. And if you stop saying, like, I need to know, where am I going? What's next? Like, what, you know, where does this lead me? And you say, like, I'm doing the stuff that I love, that I believe in, that I trust myself that I will get there. You will get there.
Should people be afraid to take detours?
I'm not sure that there's such a thing as a detour. I mean, I think that like life is an experience and everything you experience is your road, so there's no detours. I mean, if you were like you made marionettes and then you decided to become a race car driver, that might feel like a detour to you. But on the other hand, if you just ended up fixing cars, like it wasn't a detour at all. Like, I don't know. It's a weird analogy, but just to say, I just think that, like, life is one thing, so there are no detours.
Love it. What are you excited about next? What are you hoping to explore next, if anything?
Well, I'm really, really excited about the Broadleys, and so I'm excited about. I mean, so when I got to Food and Wine, like my favorite thing is that they came to me and they said, well, we might cut this magazine to like 6 issues, you know, because it's not doing so well. We might cut the name Wine off of it because wine seems to be an impediment in newsstand sales. It's the third book in a 2-book set because there was Gourmet and there's Bon Appetit, which were so much more successful than Food and Wine. But it existed. You know, Food and Wine really existed. It had some amazing bones. The recipes were incredible. The team there was super smart. The test kitchen crew was spectacular. And I had this vision for it, but I also had a team, and I had an enormous company behind me, or like a little company with an enormous company, because whatever. But I'm really excited to just see what happens with the Broadleys. Like, there's no company. It's a vision. I have this really big vision. And now what happens? Like, I don't know.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave it.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Wait, no, I want to end definitively. I don't know. But what I do know,
all right,
is that the Broadleys will bring me pleasure to do it, and I think the audience for speaking broadly, it brings them pleasure and insight, and I love telling those stories, and the coaching, you know, will help people like change and shape their lives, and the giving will help and shape the lives of so many people, and so I feel greatest about the notion that the Broadleys has the possibility to change like people's inner lives, not just what they eat for lunch or dinner.
Well, how can people, if they do want to work with you in that sort of career psychic coaching
way,
how are you finding people to work with?
It's like the nicest thing because I like psychic somebody, because I call it career psychic, which, anyway. And then they send their friends to me, which is like the greatest thing. Like you don't even need like the testimonials because the humans just keep daisy chaining. But yes, you can DM me on Speaking Broadly. That's probably the easiest and fastest. Yeah, so, yeah.
Amazing. And you can obviously hear Speaking Broadly on Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.org.
It's fun being in the interviewee chair.
Yeah. All right.
I don't have to prep.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.